That music has absolutely blown my mind.
Right.
Some of it is with a piano in it. It's like honky-tonk piano. It's American dance hall music. And the next minute, we're with this very well-lubricated mariachi band, lubricated with a lot of agave juice, I'm thinking. And it's just flying. What is this music? Well, welcome back to Post-Classical. I'm here with Joe Horowitz, and on Hell, once again, this is Bill McLaughlin. Joe, what have you put before us?
This program is called The Great Composer You've Never Heard Of. And that is one great piece of music, which we'll hear the whole of in a moment, called Sohn, part of a triptych called Homenaje a García Lorca, homage to Federico García Lorca. Yeah, this is maybe my favorite piece by Revueltas. So much is going on. I must have heard this piece in live performance a dozen times. I could hear it 12 more times. It's unlike anything written by anyone else, and it's called Sohn.
Sohn. You know, where I first came across that word, at least in classical music, it was Bernstein, when he was a kid, first out of Harvard, went down to Key West, took a bus down from Boston all the way, and spent a lot of time, when he's writing the clarinet sonata, and he was listening to not American music, not Glenn Miller, this was 1941 or 42, he was listening to Havana, Radio Havana, and he was listening to Sohn, he said. So I'm asking now, on Hell, you have some knowledge from both sides of the Atlantic. What does Sohn mean to you, and in particular, in this case of Revueltas?
So actually, according to our big Revueltas specialist, Roberto Kohl, Sohn is a popular music that comes from the Altos de Jalisco, region of Mexico. But this travels to and goes to Cuba, which also happens all the time in Latin America. But this specific Sohn, the origins are from that region of Mexico.
So to set this piece up, we'll hear the whole thing. Here's two points of reference. One, something Revueltas said. And the other, thanks to Roberto Kolb, street cries.
Exactly.
Because there are literal street cries composed into this piece. What Revueltas said, which seems particularly apt to me, is, my music is subject to the rhythms of life, not to the exact distance from one sidewalk to the other. There is nothing I can say about the technique behind the music because it doesn't interest me. Some good-humored people claim I have mastered composing technique. Then again, some ill-tempered ones claim I have not. Well, they surely know better. So that's a very characteristic statement.
Phenomenal statement.
And also he writes to his wife from Paris. I also find this very pertinent. I'd love to perform my music here simply to see the expressions of disgust on their faces. It would be as if something obscene or tasteless or vulgar had been uttered. And then finally, here are the street cries which are literally reproduced in his composition, Sohn. And now here is Sohn, composed by Silvestre Revueltas in 1936. Thank you.
I say bravo to Son, as rendered by Silvestre Revueltas. That's a great performance, sir. You sound great
on you
and your crew. What fun that is.
It's an amazing piece. It's part of a triptych called Homenaje a García Lorca. What puts this triptych together, I have no idea. Certainly the Lorca piece is the second piece, the duello, which is a dirge. But we're now going to hear the other piece, which is called Baile. This is a rare example of Revueltas culling pre-Hispanic sources. Again, this is knowledge we've obtained from our friend Roberto Kolb, who writes that Revueltas draws melodic and rhythmic inspiration from surviving ethnic melodies which were presumed to have pre-Hispanic origins.
Amerindian and from
Middle America. Before Columbus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this has got to be one of the hardest tuba parts ever composed. What do you think?
Probably. I mean, yes. My understanding is that he wrote first Baile and Son. Mm-hmm. And then he traveled to Spain in 1937. He learns about Federico García Lorca's assassination. And then he writes the second movement that he incorporates. So in the end, it's a Mexican homage to Lorca. So Revueltas is bringing his roots on the sides. Mm-hmm. Of the piece, and in the middle, he writes this extraordinary dirge. It's one of the saddest music ever written, together with the funeral that we heard from Redes. So I think the homage is both sides. It's one of the assassination of the poet, and then so how Mexico makes a big homage to this extraordinary poet.
But the piece we're going to hear right now is the final movement. Is that correct?
Baile is the opening movement.
Ah.
It's Baile, then the dirge, which is duelo, sorrow, and then ends with Son.
Uh-huh. I see. So we heard in the opposite order. We heard the finale. Yeah, baile has to do with dancing. This is almost the same way in a way as bolero.
So as Angel has just suggested, thank you very much, we have three different pictures. We have a pre-Hispanic picture of Mexico. We have a very kind of vernacular picture of Mexico. And then we have, from the Mexican perspective, this expression of sorrow for the death of Federico García Lorca. And again, this piece has a tuba part that just defies description. This is Baile from the Homenaje by Revueltas.
Thank you.
Well, that is certainly a spectacular tour de force for the tuba player. But I want to know a little bit, too. Who is that beautiful trumpet player playing the muted trumpet solo at the beginning and end?
In this case, it's another phenomenal trumpet player that collaborates with us permanently. It's Tim White, who is the principal of the Opera House. And what about this Mike Bond playing the tuba? I mean, yes. It's unbelievable. And I mean, just to mention that he's such a committed and a phenomenal musician. Besides with Revueltas, he loves that. And he never played any music of his. And as soon as he started playing his music, he said, this is a revelation.
Well, it certainly is a revelation, the way he played that stuff. It's great fun, too, because it has a sort of element of gallop, you know, like kind of old-fashioned dance music from the 19th century music hall stuff. It's like sending that up on the one hand. It's such good-spirited music.
Yes, but with the band totally drunk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The ending is fantastic.
I enjoyed it very much. I'm glad I was trying to collect them.
He does something Ives does, which is that he imitates the mistakes of non-professional amateur music makers.
Ives is, in my opinion, the closest aesthetics to Revueltas. In many music of Ives, you find this putting things together as Revueltas does. It's
putting things together that are not kindred.
We would never guess to put them together.
Exactly.
But there they are.
Exactly.
Right. There they are in the page, and there they are in our ears. Yes, yes, fantastic. What else should we hear from Revueltas?
We're now going to hear four political pieces. We've already established that he was on the far left. He is a political composer. I would say, in our hemisphere, he is the supreme political composer. People don't talk about him in general, and when they talk about political music, they don't talk about him, but he's the guy. And we're going to hear four examples of political music right now, starting with the Duello, the other movement from the Almanaque, which Angel has already mentioned, music of mourning, and he's specifically mourning the death of García Lorca. I want to quote, before we hear it, from his brother, who was himself a famous writer, José Revueltas. After Silvestre dies at the age of 40, his brother writes this eulogy. He says, "Near the end, Silvestre became very quiet, taciturn, the victim of terrible melancholy. This began following Spain's defeat." It was only natural Silvestre had experienced the most beautiful and profound moments of his life alongside the vast and great Spanish people. As we've said, he went to Spain during the Civil War. He was devastated that the Republic lost. While in Spain, he tried to join the battalion of Mexican Colonel Juan B. Gomez as the director of the small, anonymous military band which played on the front lines. Every effort and reason was needed to dissuade him. Spain was truth, the truth of the struggle, of humanity's hopes, and those men were the men of the world. In Spain, he was able to contemplate the future. He was finally able to believe that he was not alone and that a destiny advances from every corner of the world to complete man, to set him free, and to restore him to his loftiest and most sacred dignity, and yet Spain fell. Nevertheless, Silvestre would never recover from the immense pain that this caused him. He had lost children, he had lost brothers, he had lost his mother, but he never thought he would lose Spain. The black lightning of the Spanish defeat was more than he could bear, and then came the threat of some sinister light striking those eyes blind, those eyes which had suffered the most extreme pain a man can feel. From that day forward, Silvestre's silences grew longer and longer. It's also Roberto Kolb's opinion that really he felt he had nothing to live for after Franco's victory. So we're going to hear now Duelo, a dirge for García Lorca, composed in 36, just after Lorca was assassinated.
That's the first year of the revolution, and it took another year before Revueltas actually made it to Spain, by which time he'd already written this dirge. Let's listen. The dirge is called Duelo.
Thank you.
Remarkable music, isn't it? Is that constant ostinato, weeping ostinato, over and over and over again through that whole piece, and these beautiful, lonely lines in solo trumpet, tuba, horns, trombone. Remarkable music. That movement is called duello. It's the central part of the homage to Frederic Garcia Lorca, composed by Silvestre Revueltas, which he composed in 1936 after the death of Frederic Garcia Lorca in Granada that year, 1936. Beautiful music.
As you heard, we have been, all these years, we have been able to attract extraordinary musicians to the ensemble. It's really a privilege to work with, again, our principal, Chris Gecker, playing this extraordinary melody on the trumpet. Mm. It's not in the score, but I like to have the trumpet backstage, as Lorca's soul, so to say, you know. And actually, I asked him, he's such a great artist, to change the mutes. And he does that with such a mastery. And do you hear also how beautiful Revueltas writes? He brings the melody from the trumpet to the E-flat clarinet. It's brilliant. I mean, this kind of instrumentation, it's, how can anybody say that he was an amateur? I mean, I get really mad when I heard that somebody, I mean, at the time, he was considered a, you know, an amateur
dilettante.
Composer. A dilettante.
He's considered a dilettante. Another thing I want to say, because I'm so stirred listening to this music, is he always transcends cliché.
Yes.
You know, completely. There's such a risk
surprise, yeah.
of cliché when you're writing a dirge for a famous person who dies, but this is original.
There is one more very interesting component in this piece that I learned recently, actually by a phenomenal writer that collaborates with us often, Antonio Muñoz Molina, and he's from the south of Spain. And he mentioned that there is a song sung in jails by the prisoners that consists on hitting the bars. Mm. And that might be the reason of having the xylophone there as this ostinato. But he probably learned this when his trip to Spain, too.
So we're talking about Revueltas as a political composer, and we come now to his most famous composition, Censimaya, which is inspired by a poem by the Afro-Cuban poet Nicolas Guillen, also on the far left, about the slaying of a snake, and the snake is thought to represent colonialism. I want to work into this a marvelous observation by Octavio Paz, the famous poet. He writes, Silvestre was a battlefield. Inside Silvestre lived numerous interlocutors, many passions, many capacities, weaknesses as well as refinement. This wealth of possibilities gives his music the sound of a primal chord, like the first light that escapes a world in formation. All his music seems preceded by something that is not simply joy and exhilaration or satire and irony. That element is his profound empathy with his surroundings. He occupies a place in our hearts above that of the grandiose Mexican murals that seem to know all except pity. So he's juxtaposing Revueltas with Rivera and Siqueiros and Orozco and distinguishing Revueltas, also a political artist like the others, from them because of his capacity for empathy, for compassion. And so we come to Censimaya, which is very literally based on this Guillen poem. The rhythms of the poem establish the rhythms of the piece. So we'll just hear a little bit of the poem and then we'll go into the piece. Angel, you're performing here the chamber version, not the better known full orchestra version. You want to say a word about that?
Yes, I'm always very fascinated by the original version of a composer. That happens a lot. In the case of Revueltas, he wrote this original version for 13 instruments. Manuel de Falla in 1915 wrote an original version of Amor Brujo also for 14 instruments. I actually find this instrumentation, this original version, even more exciting than the symphonic one, which is, of course, you know, much more imponent. But this extraordinary way that Revueltas uses different colors with different instruments, actually, I think it works better in this original version for 13 instruments.
And Joe, you say that the rhythms that Revueltas uses in Censimaya are drawn from Guillen's poem. I know the orchestra stuff. I don't know the poem. And the orchestra's in 7/8 for the most of the part. For you folks at home, here's a quick conducting lesson. You beat it like 3. You go 1, 2, one, two, one, two, three. That gets you seven. So one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, one, two, three, four, five, six. And there's a little accent on the third pump, which
exactly.
is the part with the three. So does that come from the poem then, as
it
far as you can tell?
It comes from Mayombe, Bombe, Mayombe.
Ah.
Mayombe, Bombe, Mayombe.
Yes.
Mayombe, Bombe, Mayombe.
That's like a very old language there.
So this is
that's
like a
Spanish,
like a voodoo chant.
Yes, it's a voodoo chant. It's African words.
Ah, I see.
From African origin. It's a spell to kill a snake, and he uses that. You are absolutely right. But actually, the accent is in the last eighth note. Bum 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 bum. One two. Mayombe, bombe, mayombe, mayombe, bombe.
Yeah, you're right.
Mayombe, bombe, mayombe, boom.
Let's hear it.
Mayombe, bombe, mayombe, mayombe, bombe, mayombe. The snake has eyes of glass. The snake coils on a stick. Hit him with an axe and he dies. Don't hit him with your foot or he'll bite. Mayombe, the snake, mayombe with his eyes. The dead snake cannot eat. The dead snake cannot hiss. Mayombe, bombe, mayombe, mayombe, bombe, mayombe. Sensamaya, the snake, sensamaya.
called The Snake is Dead. Fantastic music of Revuelta Senzamaya. That's a very effective in that chamber orchestra version. I've never heard that before, and you conducted it very well, and your players are marvelous at it.
This is a rare case where you can trace an influence.
Yes, of course. I mean, there is the Rite of Spring is right there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you love that section with the seven duplets?
Yeah.
So this is very, very Stravinsky influence. But, I mean, very personal, too. So it's Revueltas. Right. Borrowing a little bit.
But you know what? You're probably going to hate that I'm going to say this. I hear a lot of Stravinsky throughout Revueltas. I mean, some of the brass writing comes to me like from The Fairy's Kiss of Stravinsky. Some of the stuff we heard early,
sure.
Even the way he writes the brass writing, the voicing mm-hmm. of the mariachi band,
mm-hmm.
reminds me of Stravinsky. The mm-hmm. fact is, though, that Stravinsky's making those pieces from the mid-30s right at the same times that Revueltas is making them in Mexico. I don't know that he could have studied it and learned it that way. I think he just intuited, or maybe Stravinsky learned it from Revueltas.
I think it's very clear that Salonen hears Revueltas as a Mexican Stravinsky.
Uh-huh.
His Revueltas recording, which is very, very clean,
mm-hmm.
hears Revueltas as a Stravinsky-style composer.
Mm-hmm.
And Stravinsky, of course, is a great favorite of Salonen, so he's a conductor who's come to Revueltas via Stravinsky, unlike, say, Angel, right?
I had this discussion with Roberto, too. I feel the Revueltas aesthetic is closer to the Spanish generation than to the Mexican generation.
Uh-huh.
In the idea of approaching popular music and putting it into a score. So this is the generation of Manuel de Falla.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, he's closer to that aesthetics, to this ideology. Béla Bartók is also present in somehow.
I can see it
so too. So this Bartók, Falla, he's much closer to that than, of course, to, you know, the modernist, to Chávez or his approach. So
I'm trying to think of Revueltas. He's working largely, these works that we hear today are all written about 10 years, in the 1930s.
Only in the 30s. He only becomes a composer around 1929, and he dies in 1940.
As a young man, he was active in, I want to call it, North America, but because it was the southern part of the USA where he was working. A lot of towns in mm-hmm. Texas, I think in Alabama.
Yes.
He started orchestras and played the concertmaster in position.
He's a virtuoso violinist. He also studied in Chicago.
Yeah, and then when he comes back as a composer, he's largely in Mexico. Oh, no? Tell me.
When he comes back, he's invited back by Chávez, and then somehow he becomes a composer. Chávez, it's clear, wished to regard him somehow as a protege. Revueltas wanted no part of that.
Mm.
He also conducted Chávez's orchestra, and he heard a lot of contemporary music, including Stravinsky, through Chávez, because that's what Chávez was performing. But they very vehemently parted ways. I learned from Roberto that Chávez actually suppressed the music of Revueltas. That sounds like something paranoid, but it is literally true.
Mm-hmm.
We may as well talk about it now. There's a parallel of sorts with Copland and Gershwin. Copland saw Gershwin as a dilettante. Certainly, Chávez saw Revueltas as a dilettante. And just as Gershwin was a greater composer than Copland, Revueltas is certainly a greater composer than Chávez. So the documents that I got from Roberto, I would consider to be shocking. There are two of them. The first is a letter written to Chávez by Herbert Weinstock. So we're talking about Carlos Chávez, by far the most influential, best-known Mexican composer, who's also an educator, who's also a conductor,
mm-hmm.
who's really the leading musician, the national musician of Mexico.
Sure.
And he's a guy who brings Mexican music all over the world. And he plays Mexican music in New York, and there's no Revueltas.
Mm-hmm.
So Weinstock, a name some may dimly remember for his biographies of composers, is also referencing Goddard Lieberson, a name you know, who is the head of Columbia Masterworks. And they're both upset with their friend Chávez. He says time and again, this is Weinstock, 1940, writing to Chávez, I find myself in the position of having to defend you against the charge of being jealous of Revueltas, of deliberately trying to smother his reputation by ignoring him. And Weinstock says that he considers Revueltas a musician of something approaching genius. So what's going on here? And then he mentions that his friend Goddard Lieberson feels the same way he does, that many musical people here, meaning in New York, are struggling with the perception that Chávez spitefully failed to do justice to his most important compatriot. So 31 years later, Chavez delivers a lecture on revueltas. This is 1971, a rare instance where he spills the beans and tells us what he actually feels. So here's Chavez on revueltas, and absorb this in the context of the music we've been listening to, if you can. Although he showed great talent in the beginning, abrupt and impressive, his creative capacities never managed to mature. His métier was not perfected, and his style did not evolve. All his compositions are essentially similar in procedure, in expression, and in style. Once or twice, after he started composing, I warned him in conversation about the issue of renewing oneself, and he understood this in theory, but it was easier for him to repeat his early works, the unending ostinati, the explosive contrasts, the piangendo melodies, etc., etc. So there's a little vignette for you, Bill, of the feelings of one composer for another.
But let's be honest. In my adult life, I was shocked to find out that almost all composers really can't stand each other. And the same way I think that novelists can't do it, because you're trying to create this ideal world, and somebody shows up, and it's like antimatter.
Sure.
So it's rare to get a kind word of a composer about another. I think it may be true about novelists and poets as well. I kind of understand why, as much as I lament it.
Anyway, this is certainly a factor in the belated discovery of revueltas. He was actually suppressed by Chavez. So we'll get now to two political songs sung by Eugenia León, a famous Mexican popular singer with whom we've often worked. The first sets Langston Hughes. So why does it set Langston Hughes? Langston Hughes also was an American leftist in Mexico. Whether he and revueltas ever met, we do not know. It's possible that they did. And revueltas chooses to set in Spanish a poem about a lynching. I'll read the poem, and then we'll hear the performance. Way down south in Dixie, break the heart of me, they hung my dark young lover to a crossroads tree. Way down south in Dixie, bruised body high in air, I asked the white Lord Jesus, what was the use of prayer? Way down south in Dixie, break the heart of me, love is a naked shadow on a gnarled and naked tree.
Stunning music. Sylvester Revueltas is setting in Spanish of a poem of Langston Hughes. Tell me again the name of this wonderful singer, Joe.
Eugenia León. She's an icon in Mexico. We actually brought this music to her for the first time, right?
She's a popular singer, and this is the first time that she learned something as difficult as this. But that was the perfect voice for her. She also read the poem in Sensemaya in Spanish before we performed the piece. It was very effective, too.
So we have another cut with Eugenia from the same concert. This is another poem by Guillén, the fellow who wrote Sensemaya, called Caminando. I'll read a little bit of it in English. This is a poem written in Cuba in 1934, soon after the Batista coup. So it's not a happy poem. Walking, walking without direction, I'm walking. Far away is the one looking for me, walking. The one waiting for me is farther away, walking. My legs start getting stiff, walking. Caminando, walking. My eyes see from a distance. My hand grips hard and doesn't let go. The one I grab onto and squeeze, he'll pay the price for everyone, walking. I'll cut the throat of that one, walking. And though he asks for my forgiveness, I eat him up and drink him down. I drink him down and eat him up, walking, walking, walking.
Caminando, caminando, caminando. Voy sin rumbo, caminando, caminando. Voy sin plata. Caminando, caminando. Voy muy triste, caminando, caminando. Está lejos, ¿quién me espera? Caminando. Caminando, caminando, caminando.
Years ago, I heard Eugenia sing it with you guys down at the Library of Congress. I was at that concert.
And, yes.
And I wasn't like Revueltas. I didn't walk around for 3 days with my eyes crossed. But for about the next week, everywhere I walked, I sang to myself, Caminando. She's fantastic the way she sets it up. And the groove that you set up into that is compelling. Yeah. Music of Silvestre Revueltas.
We're now to our final musical selection. Even though we heard from Mr. Chavez that all of Revueltas' music sounds the same, seems to me we've sampled quite a variety of music by Revueltas,
mm-hmm.
and we're ending with a piece that doesn't sound at all like anything else we've so far heard.
That's true.
This is Revueltas the Modernist, and the piece is called Planos. It's about 7 minutes long, and I've got my crib sheet in my hand, which mm-hmm. is Roberto Kolb's notes, and here's what Roberto writes. In Spanish, planos can refer either to architectural blueprints or to layers. Revueltas plays with both meanings. He introduces the music metaphorically as, quote, functional architecture which does not exclude feeling. The rhythm and sonority are reminiscent of other rhythms and sonorities, just as one construction material may be similar to or the same as another, but is used for a construction that differs in meaning, shape, and expression. That's Revueltas. And then Roberto tells us that there are two layers of music. It is not hard to identify these two musical expressions. One is overtly tonal, and the other modern and non-tonal. The first is melodious and reminiscent of romantic music. The other is harsh and provocative. They are never blended. In fact, one gets the definite impression that the old is being attacked mm-hmm. by the new. The romantic melody leads nowhere. It is never allowed to develop. It is also fragmented into smaller and smaller pieces and squeezed into ever tighter and louder episodes of modern sonority. It is as if the past were being forced to make room for the new, in a manner of speaking, a modernist manifesto.
This is an extraordinary example, the genius of Revueltas, that actually in an aesthetics that he's not especially comfortable, he creates a masterpiece. So it's more on this exasperation of a finding that somebody could find him an amateur. Planos is a masterpiece of precisely what Roberto expresses very well there. It's phenomenal. And then sense of humor. This is something very impressive in Revueltas, being such a troubled soul. I mean, he, of course, died of depression. It's very clear that at the end of his life, he was nothing hoping for anything. But there is always this humor there. In Planos, there is an extraordinary place with the trumpet that he somehow brings that humorous part there, too.
Let's listen for it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Planos, music of Silvestre Revueltas, performed by a post-classical ensemble under Angel Gil Ordóñez. Joe, this has been quite a day of music for me. I'd known a couple of pieces of Revueltas in the past, but you've opened up a whole lot more. It's wonderful stuff.
What do we do with him, Bill?
Play him some more. Let people hear him.
Where do you place him?
Well, you know what? I don't think he's as different as you guys do. I mean, I hear Edgar Varèse there. I hear Stravinsky. I hear, and Hell was right, there's a little touch of Bartók. It's not that he's copying them, but he's living in the same world. And he doesn't seem so very, very different from those other composers that we like so much to hear. I don't know why he doesn't get played more. We should.
Final thoughts?
My final thought is that he was an uncomfortable composer. He made people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And this is the worst thing you can do in life. And that was somehow his destiny. He was a militant. Joe said something very important. This is the most political artist. I'm not talking even writers. I'm including everybody. I've never known as militant as Silvestre Revueltas. So he was a militant to the end. He was reflecting the depression of Europe. He anticipated what was happening in Europe at the time. He had every characteristic to be a failure. This is his problem. His music being extraordinary.
But, you know, I have to think, Beethoven, Berlioz, Debussy, there's a few other guys made people very uncomfortable, too, not to mention Stravinsky.
Well, probably it's also a characteristic of genius.
Yeah.
I think what makes people uncomfortable about Revueltas, at least what made Copland uncomfortable, because his take on Revueltas was pretty much the same as Chavez's, is it a characteristic that I call the unfinished. This is my context for understanding Revueltas, that he belongs with a group of New World artists who are different from Old World artists in that they're, quote, unfinished. They don't go to finishing school abroad. I think Whitman is such an artist. I think Melville is such an artist. I think Mark Twain is such an artist. I think Gershwin is such an artist. I, of course, think Ives is such an artist. This is my context. And the reason it matters, I would say, is that it explains why he was rejected in his own time, which was a modernist time. The modernists didn't like Ives. They didn't like Gershwin. They didn't like Revueltas for the same reason. They said it explicitly. They said, these guys are all gifted dilettantes. They're amateurs. We don't hear them as dilettantes. We hear them as somehow self-created, original, spontaneous, improvisational. That's the context in which I understand Revueltas.
Well, thank you. That's very helpful to me. I agree with you. And you've maybe agree with you even more during the course of the last couple of hours. Man, you folks at home, you sticking with this? This is not like anything else on the air, is it? Post-classical. We've got the brain trust here, Joe and Angel, and I'm just sort of along for the ride most of the time. It's been a real pleasure seeing the two of you again. I can't wait for our next get-together.
Gershwin, Bill.
I'm open for Gershwin any day. You don't have to do any convincing there. So thanks to all of you for tuning in. Thanks to Joe Horowitz. Thanks to Angel Gil Ordóñez. I can't wait to our next get-together.
Thank you, Bill. Always a treat.
Thank you, Bill. We can't wait.
You've been listening to Post Classical on WWFM, the Classical Network.
For all these episodes of Post Classical, we want to thank our recording engineer in New York, Bill Zygmunt of Digital Island Studios. Check them out at digital-island-studios.com. The next Post Classical, that Gershwin program Joe spoke about, will come your way Friday evening, June 22nd. Post Classical is made possible in part by members such as David and Phyllis, because classical music is essential. If you wish to join them in sponsoring a program like Post Classical, contact us at wwfm.org. For hosts Bill McLaughlin, Joe Horowitz, and Angel Gil Ordóñez, I'm David Ozenberg. Post Classical is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and wwfm.org.